This is episode 43.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of Road Trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody. I am Mike Wendland, and this is the Road Trekking RV Podcast. And whether you have a small motor home like the one Jennifer and I travel in, or a great big Class a fifth wheel, a pop-up, heck, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent and are just thinking about getting an RV, this show's for you. We talk about being out there, enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people and places, and finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, and sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV experience. That's what Road Trekking the Podcast is all about, the RV lifestyle. And this episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast is brought to you by Van City RV, where they only sell small motorhomes, Class B motorhomes. By Alde, A-L-D-E, the only name you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV. By Leisure Time RV, serving Central Florida and the World Wide Web from Winter Garden, Florida. And Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome. This episode being released on Wednesday, July 8th, 2015, episode 43. And all the things that we talk about today, you can find in the show notes on our roadtrekking.com blog. Just go to roadtrekking.com/43, and you'll find all of the references and the links from the news stories to the resources that we share with you here. So you'll find them on the blog. And coming to you today from the beautiful state of Maine. As Jennifer and I bring you this podcast, we are overlooking, what's that called out there? What is that called? It's called Clam Bay. And where are we, my dear?
We are in Rockport.
My lifelong traveling companion and my wife Jennifer joins me in Rockport. Rockport, Maine, overlooking the beautiful water. Boy, the tides here are amazing. I don't know how long they go, but right now the water is up to the shore pretty much of where we're broadcasting from. And in another 8-9 hours, low tide comes, and it's like a quarter mile, 200-yard walk out before you hit the water.
So, and that's fun, to walk out there and find what treasures you will find.
So this is a little different than most of our trips. This is actually a family vacation, and we are with our son, Jeff. His wife, Amy, and our brand new granddaughter, Jovi. Boy, we spend a lot of quality time with Jovi, aren't we?
We are. So it's very nice to have to carve out some time to be with your loved ones.
And then also with us is our daughter, Wendy, or her husband, Dan, and our daughters, Wawa and Rachel. And we are having a great time all being here and enjoying this time in Maine. Lots of exploring, lots of seafood. We got a lot to talk about in this episode. In a moment, we'll take some of your listener questions. We've got a great off-the-beaten-path report. Another one about Maine and a place that we just really can't say highly and speak highly enough of, and that is the Acadia National Park here in Maine. We've got some traveling tech information. And for all those who like to use your smartphones and your tablets to do some photographing and taking pictures, we've got some great apps that will make that much easier for you. So that will be a lot of fun. I think you'll get a kick out of that tech segment. And then we have an interview with one of our favorite people, the Zen master of full-timing, our pal Camp Skunk. And we're going to talk about the new internet satellite system that Jennifer and I have in our Road Trek CS Adventurous. We picked one up 5-6 weeks ago now, and have had a chance to use it. And Camp Skunk, who is like an expert in all this stuff, is going to come by, and we're going to visit and talk about whether you may want to think about a satellite internet for those places where you cannot access the internet. So there, got all that coming up. Episode 43, we have rolled along. Can you believe that we're now past the 4th of July, and the next thing everybody's talking about is Labor Day, and it'll be like the summer season will be almost all over.
I know. Everybody will be back to school before you know it. Back to school shopping.
Yeah. Oh, stop it. Stop it. It's just, it's not good to talk about such things. But we're lucky. We travel pretty much all year round, but summertime, we've been on the road really almost entirely now since May, and still enjoying it. And we're up in the mid-coast region of Maine as we broadcast to you this week. All right, right now let's take our voicemail. And by the way, you're going to hear some people asking some questions here. They have left these questions on the Leave Voicemail link on the RoadTrekking.com blog. On the right-hand side of RoadTrekking.com is a little black bar. It says Leave Voicemail. And all you have to do is click that. You can then record your question on the computer or the laptop using the microphone that's built into your device, just like these folks did.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
I tried to replace the end caps. I need to replace the end caps on my awning. I've tried to contact the awning manufacturer, but I don't know, they don't seem to reply. But it looks like it could be quite a problem with rivets and all that. Where do I go to find out?
Well,
thank you so much.
Well, thank you. That caller's name is Bob. And Bob, you didn't give us much to go on here. We don't know what kind of an RV you have. We don't know who makes the awning that you have. So anything that we give you is just going to be sort of a generic answer here. But you do know who the manufacturer is, so you called them, and you said you're not getting much of a response. You can probably imagine why. It's not probably not a high-ticket item, and they want to sell entire awnings rather than just give you the end caps.
There's somebody out there that knows how to fix it and somebody who can do it.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you two suggestions. One, go to an RV dealer. Whoever you bought that RV from, assuming you bought it from a dealer instead of a private person, go to the dealer and ask them. Have them come out, have their service guy come out and look at it and find out from them what they would say. That's our first step. And if you have maybe bought it from a private dealer, you might want to look at who carries that brand of RV and find a dealer near you and either phone them up, or I think you make a better case for something small like that in parts by going in person, letting them, bringing the guy out and, oh, yeah, look at that. Mm-hmm, yep, I got that, or I can get that for you. So that's my best suggestion. Short of that, Bob, if you are on our Facebook group, our Road Trekking the Group for Facebook, you can post that question. Make sure, you tell us what brand RV you have and what brand awning, and you'll get a little better of an answer. The other thing is try calling the manufacturer of the RV and ask them. Tell them what year it is and manufacturer, and they might say, oh, yeah, we got some of those. We'll send them to you. So I don't think you have any trouble finding them. I don't know what you mean about the rivets, but somebody knows.
You have to maybe post a picture. The blog is a great place.
Yeah,
to,
or Facebook page. Group. Yep.
Yes.
Post a picture there, and we'll get you some help. If you're not a member of that Facebook group, it's very simple. Just go to Facebook, look up Road Trekking the Group. Now, we have a page, and there are some other groups out there, but the one you want is Road Trekking the Group, and find that. Then you have to, on the right-hand side of the Facebook page, just click Join Group, and I'll get to it. I'll approve you, and we'll bring you into the group, and you'll find it's a very active group of very supportive people who love to help out. So hope that answers your question, Bob. All right, let's go to another listener question.
Hi, my name is Terry in California, and I am considering buying the Road Trek Zion. However, I'm concerned that it only has one 400 amp AGM battery, and I'm wondering about the impact of that one battery on my ability to boondock. I'm particularly concerned about having battery life for the refrigerator since it's 12 volt only. So if you could answer that question for me, it would go a long ways in my decision making on which road trek I want. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Terry, for phoning that in. Zion, that's the new model from Road Trek that uses that Dodge ProMaster chassis. It's a beautiful little machine. We're starting to see a lot of those now at dealers around the country. And I know that Road Trek just announced something called EcoTrek and some of their lithium battery options. So depending how much you want to be out there boondocking, in other words, without commercial power, without access to, plug it into a campground, our advice, I think, is to contact your dealer, your local Road Trek dealer for the Zion, and ask them You know, describe your needs. They have all sorts of different packages that you can pick up that will add battery capacity. We know we use lithium ions in our Road Trek CS Adventurous. Love them. They last a long, long time. And of course, you have this system when you drive, it charges for you. If you have solar, if you can get solar, and you can for that Zion, the solar is always topping up the battery. So there's lots of solutions. The first step is to sit down with a dealer and go through your exact needs. But you do want more battery capacity, I think, if you're going to do boondocking.
I think that she does. And best advice, talk to that dealer. Make sure that you get it in writing if need be.
Yep.
What expectations you have.
And have fun with it. You will enjoy it. And they're a beautiful machine. They really drive nice. They drive like a car. And we're hearing lots of people saying great things about the Zion. So, Terry, just look into some of those optional packages for lithium ion and for solar, and you'll be great. All right, one more. This comes from Marty. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Mike. Marty Elmore in Southern Missouri. As I believe you know, we've recently entered the world of wonderful Class B motorhomes, and we're enjoying our Sprinter very much and have spent many nights in it since purchasing it in March. But I have a question about RV refrigerators. We all know that they need to be level to work at their best and so as not to be damaged. But I'm just curious, if a person has to park in a less than level spot for a relatively short period of time, maybe to go and have a meal or just to make a quick stop at a store or whatever, is it necessary if you can't find a level spot to turn the refrigerator off? Does it matter if it's on propane or 12 volt? How do you approach that? So that's my question. I just wondered if you could kind of flesh out how concerned a person needs to be about parking for brief times in an unlevel spot with the fridge on. Always enjoy hearing the podcast. Glad that Jennifer's doing better. God bless you guys. Thanks.
Thank you so much for being glad that I'm doing better, and I certainly am glad I'm doing better as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, what comes to mind is if it were a problem having to park level to make the refrigerator work, that they would give you that notice when you buy it.
Well, some of the older ones had some issues with being level. So in Marty's case, it sounds like a brand new one. I believe I've seen Marty on our Facebook group, and he has a new one. Marty, you don't have to worry. Certainly you don't have to worry about just parking for a little while like that. Truthfully, we've had three RVs now with propane and 12-volt refrigerators, and we have never given it being level a second thought, right? Because we just park it, and it's been fine. It's worked always well.
Yeah, we haven't had any problem. Like I say, I think they would tell people if that were something that you needed to be made aware of.
Now, some of the older ones did tell you that, but the new ones, I mean, relative, if you're level enough to sleep, don't worry about it. You're great. You don't have to be perfectly plumb. We are, I don't think we, I mean, if we use leveling blocks one out of every 10 times, that's amazing. And we never have had to worry about our refrigerator.
He mentioned going out for dinner. So maybe stopping for an hour, hour and a half going in to eat.
You know, maybe it's on a hill or something like that. I don't think you'd have to worry about it. For one thing, if it slows down, it's not going to hurt. You know, in an hour with it all sealed, you're not going to lose much.
I would call the manufacturer and ask.
Yeah, you could if you really. Just put it on the web, you'll get, the problem is you put it on our Facebook group, you get 900 people who will answer you, Marty. And one of the things that that marvels me is when you go online, how many people immediately see the negative and worry about everything. And so you'll get some people who will say, oh, the world is falling. If you park for an hour, it's going to self-implode and you're going to have all sorts of issues. But look, in the real practical world, I can tell you don't have to worry about that. Okay? Don't listen to the naysayers. But you will get some practical advice if you post that on the Facebook group. And I don't think you have to worry. Just go out there and enjoy it and have a good time.
Enjoy your dinner.
Enjoy your dinner. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the neat things. And being able to just park anywhere in a small Class B motorhome, that really makes it excellent. All right, those are our questions this week. If you want to be a part of the program and you have a question, just phone it in on our listener voicemail link right at roadtrekking.com. Well, I know you want to go back and play with that grandbaby of ours.
True, I do.
I had a dragger out here to say hello to the podcast. And Marty referenced you feeling better. And for people who are just tuning in, while we were on our last trip out in Montana, you came down with pneumonia and had to be hospitalized for 3 days.
That is true. And I've got to say I'm doing better and I'm very grateful.
Well, you just took a two-mile hike out to the end of a breakwater here. And I was in Rockland, Maine. And you didn't have any trouble walking those still boulders.
It was a very slow go, but yes, it was 2 miles.
Yep. So Jen's back, and she's starting to work out a little bit and feeling much better than those pneumonia days back in Montana. This Maine, fresh sea air, beautiful blue water, that's good for our soul, isn't it?
It is beautiful weather where we are right now. Not too hot. Nice breeze,
yeah,
beautiful view.
Temperature's been like the upper 70s, mid-70s. Beautiful, perfect. All right, go play with the granddaddy. I'll be with you as soon as I finish the rest of the
All
program.
Right.
All right. There goes Jennifer. Thank you very much for that, Jen, for being part of us. Sponsoring this part of the podcast is Van City RV in St. Louis, Missouri. Van City RV only sells small motorhomes, Class B motorhomes specifically. The owner, Ray Dwyer, has been in the RV business for the better part now of half a century, and he is considered to be the dean of Class B RVs. Nobody knows more about small motorhomes than Ray and his crew. They have new and used Class B motorhomes in stock from the major manufacturers, and when you fly to buy your RV, fly into St. Louis to buy it from Van City RV, they'll arrange to have you picked up from the airport. They'll reimburse you $500 towards your airfare, and then your RV will be fully prepared for travel, complete with fuel tanks filled up with fuel and propane. And a complete orientation with their staff about your new RV so you can take delivery and set out for home. Dan the Van Man gives us this week's specials at Van City RV.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we got a summer sale going on here celebrating our 45th anniversary. I got two great deals. I got a CS Adventurous loaded up out the door at $118. We got the SS Agile out the door at $97,000. Check them out at VanCityRV.com. We're also looking for your great trade-ins. So if you got a trade-in, we're going to make you a great deal. Give us a call at 1-800-467-3905 or check them out at VanCityRV.com.
News. Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, we're up here in Maine, and it's been interesting. There's a huge controversy up in this part of the country about a proposed new national park. In fact, proponents want to create a 150,000-acre national park up here in Maine. However, they're running into some fierce local opposition. Two of the communities closest to this proposed park have soundly rejected the idea of a national park in their woods. These are non-binding referendums, but generally speaking, they wield a lot of weight because it's indicating how the local folks feel about it. The opponents to the national park up here in Maine have said that they just don't want federal authority encroaching any more into Maine. They think it would cramp the state's forest products industries because inevitably there'd be tighter air quality restrictions. Many of these communities, by the way, have had a strong economic hit as the lumbering and timber production have declined, and they feel that this would drive the nail even further into their economic problems. They think the big issue is unwanted federal authority in northern Maine. They think it would generate very low-paying jobs, and then they think it would morph into far more than 150,000 acres. And they also note that the National Park Service doesn't do a real good job. They have a huge maintenance backlog with all of its different facilities around the country, and that's true. They really do. They're not keeping up with the work they need to do. But proponents of this park up here, and it's largely being driven by a family, a wealthy family up in this area, they say a park would generate, they guess, between 400 and 1,000 jobs. They think that it would be maintained by $40 million in private endowments from the company that's donating some of the land. They say it would diversify a regional economy that has truly been devastated by the closure of two paper mills. and that it would coexist fine with other lumber industries in the area. They think that the parks in several western states work well with surrounding foresters there, and that national parks have never in the service's history been anything other than positive economic contributors to communities around them. So two very vocal, well-financed campaigns. Maine Woods Coalition is the group that opposes the park, and they concede that the area needs economic help up here, but they note that this proposal is just not a good idea, but they say that people are going to not give up. They're going to keep trying to push it through. And indeed, the leading park proponent is a guy named Lucas St. Clair, a very wealthy family up here in northern Maine. And his spokesman, a guy named David Farmer, says that they're going to continue the campaign. They aren't going to change their focus or tactics, but they're going to try some more votes. They think that there's a lot of interest on that, and they're going to keep trying to change the hearts and minds of the local people, and they think that it's pretty good. St. Clair has a whole bunch of family land. Right next, if you know Maine, it's right next to the Baxter State Park, beautiful state park, and they want to create a 75,000-acre national park and then a same-size multi-use recreation area. They're going to give it away free, the St. Clair family is. And his mother, by the way, is a millionaire businesswoman, Roxanne Quimby. She's been offering this up since 2011. So the St. Clairs and the Quimbys, two wealthy families with vast holdings up here, want to turn their land into a national park, and some of the local communities closest to it, no way. So we'll keep our eye on that and kind of keep track of what happens with that. But big controversy. You'd think, you know, national park, great. But not so, at least up here in Maine. Other RV news of the week, a couple of very sad stories that are out there. And I almost hate to report them because, you know, they're kind of just bummer stories, but they really are strange. One of them, and I think that the lesson in all of this is be very careful. Sad story in Davenport, Iowa, not too far from Davenport at a truck stop there. A woman, a 74-year-old woman, was killed. She was standing outside her husband, their RV, their recreational vehicle, while her husband was driving, a Class A. And she was guiding him into a parking spot at a truck stop there. And somehow or another, the RV went out of control and it struck and killed her. And then the RV continued on and it struck a car full of children. This was in the Flying J truck stop. It was just a sad thing. Their kids were hurt. Most of them are going to be just fine. They're going to be okay. The mom, the woman, the 74-year-old woman who was helping her husband back in, her name is Mary LeMay. She died, and so sorry about it. The LeMays are from Centerville, Tennessee, and police still investigating that, but so sad that he's smashing into these parked cars. One of them had four kids inside, and one of the cars was pushed against a propane tank, and it was pretty amazing. Very strange accident, and it just reinforces how you got to be very careful and take care. And then there was another sad story, and this happened out in Colorado, near Castle Rock, Colorado, Douglas County, Colorado. Sheriff's office there is investigating a 60-year-old man who was camping in a National Forest campground up there with his family. And this happened last weekend. And suddenly, out of nowhere, a stray bullet hits him, and it kills him. Rainbow Falls Park area of the Pike National Forest in Colorado. Investigators are trying to figure out where this bullet came from, who fired it. But they note it is a very sad reminder of how dangerous gunfire at national forests can be. The family says there was a lot of target shooting in this national forest going on all around them, and there were several areas where they could hear gunshots all the way up till dark. They said some of them were high-powered rifles. They also heard what they thought were semi-automatic weapons with multiple rounds being fired. State police investigating it. They say that the camper was hit by what investigators believe was a stray bullet. They haven't confirmed that, but they believe it was an errant bullet, and they're trying now to find out whether where this came from, who is exactly there. They've got a lot of leads on it, and they're turning to the public. So if you happen to be in that area, Rainbow Falls Park, Pike National Forest, last Friday, and you noticed a lot of target shooting, you might want to give a call to the local state police, because they're trying to solve that. We'll keep our eye on that story, too, and report more about that as we move on. But that's a couple sad stories. A woman dies as she's helping her husband back up their vehicle. And camper gets hit with a stray bullet. Pretty traumatic for everybody involved. So anyway, I want to again remind you that we love to get your questions, and you can send us your questions. It's very simple to do. You just go to the blog, and the blog is where you keep track of everything that's happening in the RV world during the week.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The Small Motorhome RV Travel Blog. Travel blog.
This portion of the podcast is brought to you by Alde, A-L-D-E, the only name you need to know in heat when it comes to your RV. The Alde hydronic system brings lots of really great features and benefits that you just can't find with other heating systems for an RV. For example, the Alde hydronic system has silent, radiant heat. I mean, we're talking about a wonderfully comfortable, warm, even, natural heated interior. It is great for pets. It has increased interior space because basically they combine two systems in one, your water heater and your comfort zone heater. It is efficient. The whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC, and it extends the life of your propane about 40% over forced air. You can heat with electric or propane. It has multiple options and amenities, so you can get towel warmers for this. You can get all the floor heat. You can arrange to have tank heating, so you could do four-season camping. It works with engine heat, and it provides driver comfort up front as well. And it has a great programmable color touchscreen thermostat and an interface. And something else you like about the Alde, you armchair engineers out there, minimal sidewall penetration. Because it has a very small combined intake and exhaust, it eliminates those great big cutouts and sidewall congestion that you find with other heating systems on other RVs. The Alde hydronic system. Alde, the only name you need to know when you're choosing a heating system for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV tech tip of the week.
All right, we've got some cool photo editing apps for you that we want to talk about this week. Chances are you're taking a lot of photos with your smartphone and from your tablet, right? You're doing all sorts of that stuff. Well, here's some apps that we have found. There's a million different photo editing apps out there, and we found three of them I want to share with you this week, and I'll put links to them in the show notes. Just go to roadtrekking.com/43, but they all work well. The first one is called Polar, P-O-L-A-R-R. Very popular web-based program. It's been around a while now for Android, but it's now available also for Apple or iOS-based devices. This is pretty cool. They claim to be a pro photo editor for everyone to take those photos you shoot on your smartphones or your tablets, and you can tweak and edit them using all kinds of settings, a number of really endless edits you can make to a photo. Lots of options. They even have they've got a little $4.99 in-app purchase that'll give you more things you can do with it. So the basic version is free. It works for Apple and Android, and it's very cool. So check out that Polar, P-O-L-A-R-R. There's a link to it on the show notes, roadtrekking.com/43. Two more. Photo Editor by Aviary. You want to look at this. If you're a little more serious of a photographer, and you still like to use your smartphone for those shots that you know you might get when you didn't have your good camera with them, this is a really nice photo editor by Aviary. Is now part of the Adobe Creative Cloud. And if you're a serious photographer, you know Adobe. They're the ones who make the very popular and powerful Photoshop editing program, as well as Lightroom for managing photos. Well, Photo Editor by Aviary is a new app that they acquired that allows users to make really beautiful photos in seconds. They give you 100+ professionally designed filters and creative stickers and frames, touch-up tools that you can add and apply to the photos you take with your smartphone or tablet, adjustable settings like sharpness and brightness. Basic version, again, is free for iOS and Android. And, of course, like most apps these days, they have available extras that you can purchase in app if you want. Now, if you're looking for something just basic, something simple, there's a lot of them out there. The ones that we kind of are looking at these days that we like for really simple basic editing for mobile phone photos is try Pixlr, P-I-X-L-R. It's kind of fun to work with this little app. It's very powerful. It makes it very easy. You can quickly crop and rotate and fine-tune pretty much any picture you take with your smartphone. And in fact, the makers of the app claim that it delivers more than 2 million different combinations of free effects and overlays and borders that you can use to edit images, even in poor lighting conditions. The app's free for iOS and Android, and again, built-in app purchases are available to do even more. This portion of the podcast brought to you by Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network. Now, being an RV owner, I spend a lot of time on the road. However, I still like to keep tabs on what's going on at home. And with the Canary home security system, I can check on the house while I'm gone. It's very easy to set up, even easier to use. Canary is a complete home security system in one device. It comes complete with built-in sensors. It's programmed, so it learns your habits and adapts to your home over time. Has motion-activated sensors automatically that start recording whenever it senses movement. And should it detect something out of the ordinary, it will send an instant notification to your smartphone, which then lets you to stream video and high-quality audio to your home in real time. And the best thing is, you never need worry about missing a notification. Friends, family, neighbors can be your backups if you're not around, and you can add them to the notification settings to receive alerts. You can protect the people and places you care about most. Turn your home into a smart home with tech-savvy accessories that help you stay connected while on the go. Visit your local Verizon retailer today to check out the home security system from Canary. And you can visit roadtrekking.com/VZW to find out even more cool uses for techs. Lots of all sorts of things that you can use, and have a great time.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
Well, we're going to combine a couple of reports. One, a listener who called in with some great stuff about an area that we are visiting here in Maine called, if you've never been out to East, this is kind of, I guess you could call it it doesn't have quite the animals that Yellowstone has, but it's sort of Yellowstone or Yosemite of the East. It is just an incredible national park. It is the Acadia National Park in Maine. And ever since we told everybody we're coming out to Maine, I've been having all sorts of listeners and readers of the blog, listeners of the podcast, sending me in tips and giving me some great examples. And here is one from Larry. And if you are coming to Acadia, you might want to take note of Larry's suggestion, and then I'll be back to tell you more about Acadia National Park as kind of a bucket list destination you need to make right after we hear Larry's suggestion.
Hey, Mike. My name is Larry Frank. We have a Road Trek 190, and I heard your podcast about Maine. Little tip, if you go to Red's Eats in Wiscasset, there's a real nice town wharf across the street and about a quarter of a mile down that has picnic tables and great parking. The other thing is, if you go to Acadia National Park, as soon as you get into the park where you go to pay and through the ranger stations, right before that is a stop called the Overlook. You need a park pass to get into to park your car, your RV into the Overlook. But if you go down that path and you stand on the rocks, you look down, and there's a real nice sea cave that's not on the maps. And you can go in it at low tide, but it's very dangerous. If you get caught in there with the tide, then you're stuck in there. But that's a kind of a must-see if you go through the park. And thank you. Have a good trip.
I appreciate that, Larry. Acadia National Park is just a stunning place. I'm going to tell you all about it in a couple moments. But right now, I want to tell you that this part of our podcast is brought to you by Leisure Time RV, serving Central Florida and the Internet from Winter Garden, Florida. They are one of the oldest Road Trek Class B dealers in the United States. They've been family-owned for 45 years, selling Road Treks over 25 years, and consistently among the top 10 Road Trek dealers in the United States. Now, they want me to let you know that they have in stock the new Zion, the latest new model from Road Trek, the Zion, front-wheel drive, 280 horsepower, V6, fuel-efficient engine, stability programming. You've got wind assistance, sway assistance, drift compensation, also electronic stability control, hill start assist. Zion has 5-passenger seating, including the driver, open center aisle, so you can store. I've seen everything from bikes to even kayaks and larger items. Has a twin queen bed, sleek exterior, aerodynamic design, drives very much like a car. Anybody, if your wife or your spouse doesn't want to drive, maybe you are the wife and your other half doesn't want to drive. They will on this one. This drives really easy. It's so nice to drive, very comfortable. The galley features 5 cubic feet refrigerator, which is a big refrigerator for an RV. Interior has a permanent bathroom. There's an outside shower. Power steps for the driver and the passenger. There's side entry, solid surface counterpart. You want to see that. They have a couple of really neat Zions in stock right now. Last I heard, they had one in elegant white and a platinum silver unit. And you can go and in their air conditioning showroom right now at Leisure Time RV in Florida and check them all out. There's a link under the show notes. Look at roadtrekking.com/43 for the link to Leisure Time RV. Now, I promised more on Acadia National Park, and boy, it is stunning. I've wanted to see this park now for 4 years that we've been out RVing across North America, and it's so nice to finally be here in Maine. Most of Acadia is actually on an island. It's called Mount Desert Island, which is more of a patchwork of parkland. There's some private property on the island. There's seaside villages all around. But it's a beautiful region of Maine, of the Maine coast. Mount Desert Island once was continental mainland, but it was a mountainous granite ridge in the edge of the ocean. And then they say about 20,000 years ago, towering glaciers ripped through and anyway, rounded the tops. It cut passages and gouged out lake beds and widened valleys. And as the glaciers melted, the sea rose and now it's an island, and the park includes, mountains. There's a great ocean shoreline. There's deep woods. There's lakes. In addition to Mount Desert Island, it comprises parts of a couple of small islands, part of a peninsula on the mainland, and it's got about 47,000 acres in all, and you just really need to take a look at this park. It's a gorgeous place. Two mountains, Cadillac Mountain. They named that after the French explorer Antoine Calumet, or Cadillac. It's on the eastern side of the island, and that's got this green lichen-covered pink granite summit. You've probably seen photographs of it. Because of its eastern location and height, it's probably the first place in the U.S. to see the sunrise. And a lot of people climb to the Cadillac to get those sunrise shots every day. You can ride a bike up to the top of it if you want. It's a little steep climb, but it's very doable. Lots of roads throughout there. Originally, the carriage roads were built by John D. Rockefeller. And the mountains of Acadia, hiking and bike riding, great views of the ocean, the island lakes, the forest. There's two beaches, lifeguarded beaches in the summertime. Sand Beach, which is right off the Park Loop Road. That's a beautiful road, about 27-mile loop road you can take around. And you can do some swimming there. The water Water very seldom exceeds 55 degrees, but people jump in anyway. That's Sand Beach. There's also a really nice little beach called Echo Lake Beach, which is a little bit warmer. Freshwater swimming there on the west side of the island. Other than Echo Lake, that's about it. You'll find there's lots of camping there. There's two great campgrounds that you can check out. Blackwoods Campgrounds open all year, which is unusual in a national park. You need reservations recommended, needed probably in the summer from May to October. Just call National Recreation Reservation Service. I'll put a link to their phone number up in the show notes. And then the other campground for Acadia is Seawall, which is seasonal. It's open Memorial Day to the end of September. And again, in the summer, you probably want recommendations. That's first come, first serve. There are also some spots there that they keep, you know, like all national parks are just available for that day or for somebody who comes in that night. But they fill up very quickly, too. So two great campgrounds, Blackwoods Campground and Seawall Campground. So there you go. Check it out. I think you will be incredibly excited about this place, Acadia National Park. Not only a great off-the-beaten-path place, but also well-deserving of your bucket list. Well, many of you know that on the road, I am pretty much always able to do my job. I'm connected by Verizon. They are the sole technology provider, except for one piece of gear that we just got. But really, probably 90% of the time, I'm able to make a great internet connection on the Verizon 4G LTE network using my Verizon Jetpack data card. I also picked up a Wilson Cellular Booster, and it has a little external antenna that's a magnet mount on the top of the roof of our little RV. And really, probably 90% of the places we go, even the boondocking places, you can get a cell signal. And I'm able to get online, do my job. That's why we can travel so far, because I'm able to do my work from the road. However, there are places and there are times when there is just no cellular signal to amplify for my Wilson Booster. And I am out in true boondock country. And that is where I needed some extra help. And to do that, I picked up a system, a satellite internet system for my road trek. We actually drove down to Tucson, Arizona, and actually had the folks who sell it, Barb and Joe Nolly down in Tucson, are the distributors of the system that we bought. Their company, I'll put a link on the show notes, but you can check it out. Their company's known as Mobile Internet Satellite. And I could have ordered and had it shipped anywhere, but I found it was easier if I just took them up on their offer, because they offered to train me, and I went down to them, and they spent really a day and a half showing me how to set everything all up. And then I had the benefit of my buddy, Cam Skunk. I was down in Tucson, and Cam Skunk was upgrading his satellite system, and he was actually going to come down to Tucson later in that week. So as I was leaving Tucson and he was on his way down, we decided we would find a place to meet, and we chose to meet in Flagstaff, Arizona. And there I continued my education about satellite internet. And after Cam Skunk and I established it and set it up on up in Flagstaff, I sat him down in a lawn chair, and we talked a little bit about what's involved with satellite internet. Who's it for? Because it's not for everybody. It's much slower than most internet service. How do you get it? What's involved in a satellite system? There's also a story I just did this week on the blog, roadtrekking.com. When you go there, you'll see it. It's right up there, very prominent. And you can read that. I'll put a link with the show notes here. But right now, let's walk through it audio style with our buddy Camp Skunk. All right, I'm with Camp Skunk, and we are in Flagstaff, Arizona. It's a beautiful place.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and we have been having fun all afternoon here setting up satellite internet.
I don't know. I think Mike is good enough to join the exalted ranks of the satellite internet users here, so I'm here to help him out and show him the tricks of the trade.
Now, when you walked up, I was bleeding.
Well, not very much, Mike. It was just a flesh wound. Mike, see, the whole purpose of the offset bracket is to put the center of gravity over the center of the tripod and Mike had it set up in a way that I have never seen before in my life. But anyway, we got him straightened out and swung the dish around so that all the weight is right down the middle of the tripod. It tends to jump on you if it's not set up right. So Mike had endured a few wounds there, but we got him patched up and he's going to live.
So they always say that pain is a great teacher, so now I know how not to do it. But it has been interesting. It is not obviously for everyone, but Camp Skunk has it because he, probably more than anybody that we'll ever meet in the small motorhome lifestyle, boondocks in the middle of places where often there is no cell phone coverage. So Jennifer and I have been doing more and more of that. We picked up our system from mobile satellite internet in Tucson, Arizona. We'll put a link up with the show notes here for it. That's Camp Skunk sent me there, and you've been using them for many years.
Yes, they got me on the line originally. I bought my equipment from a company who promptly went out of business as soon as I got it. And I had some trouble getting set up, but I got in touch with Barb and Joe down there in Tucson, and they talked me through it over the telephone and got me straightened out. So I've got nothing but good things to say about it.
Well, I actually had to go down and physically meet them in person and I got a lesson from them, and then jumped up here to Flagstaff, and Camp Skunk was kind enough to spend the afternoon helping me both route it in the vehicle and get it working. Now, for those of you who want to know how to do it, we've got some photographs that we put on an earlier blog post, but let's talk about, first of all, why you would want a satellite internet system.
Well, the best thing about satellite internet is that it works everywhere. It's a very particular to set up system. It's not just plug it in and hook it up to your computer and it works. It's not like that at all. You have to have a fair amount of practice in how to use it. But because half the time wherever I camp, I am out of cell phone range, I would be without internet if it weren't for satellite internet.
So this is obviously an option for everybody. Now, what does it consist of? Well, the parts are a satellite dish.
And a way to mount the satellite dish. You're going to have a tripod and the offset bracket. And all this stuff sits on a tripod out somewhere near your RV. And there's cables that run from there inside to the modem. And Mike and I also use a router so that we don't have to physically connect a wire to get internet. It's like your home router system. Anyone within a few dozen feet can get internet on their whatever device they're using, their laptop or handheld or tablet or whatever.
So it sets up a router or Wi-Fi network, so a modem, which is very small, and the internet. Router Wi-Fi system. That's the only devices that you need. The first challenge I think many people are going to face is how do you get the wires outside? Do you need to get a wire from the modem and from the Wi-Fi router to the satellite dish? And that was one of our biggest tasks. We found where there's a will, there's a way. There's always a little hole that you can get a cable through.
Yeah, that's why I saw that Mike sent me a picture of how he was going to do it, and I immediately came down here because it was ugly. it's like that little thing on your where you hook up the cable TV to get cable. It's a little connection like there. You need two more just like that, and they need to go from wherever it is outside. Mine and now Mike's is down there where the cable TV hookup is. Go from there to whatever cabinet your modem is in. So I had to make sure Mike wasn't trailing wires down the road here as he drove. And so this morning we worked on that and got it secured and where it's easy to hook up to the outside and then have that connection go all the way to where it needs to go inside.
So once you have the cables run from the inside of the rig to where you mount the modem and where you mount the router, and I put them inside a cabinet. And on Camp Skunk's suggestion, there's a power connection in one of the cabinets, the electronics cabinet on the road trek. Many other RVs have similar cabinets. We ran a power strip with a little surge protector on it and plugged in the modem and the router and all the other electronic devices in it.
it's out of sight, out of mind, but you can open that cabinet and you can see if it's all the lights are functioning. So those are the first things. That's how you get that's the devices you need and how to get it hooked up. The challenge comes in getting the satellite. And where we are here in Flagstaff now, I don't know how high up we are, but...
it's about 7,000 feet, yeah.
7,000 feet. There's a lot of, I don't know what kind of pine trees those are.
Those are ponderosa pines. Mike found one of the 13 trees in Arizona and tried to set up on the north side of it here. So we straightened that out, though. You have to have a direct line of sight to where the satellite is. There are some devices that will help you. But if you're trying to thread the needle and shoot between two trees, sometimes you're wrong. It takes some practice, and the best place to set up is Kansas, actually.
It's flat. So setting up and getting that clear eye to the satellite. Now, there are apps available for Android, for the iPhone, for your computer, that will allow you to know, based on where your present location is, where in the sky you can find that satellite. But as Joe and as Barb Nolly explained to us in Tucson, we got our system. This satellite is 22,500 miles above the Earth. It's in geostationary orbit, so it's always in one spot, but it changes as you go different places.
Yes, it's always in the same spot. They're named for the latitude that they're over. I'm on 99 West, which is somewhere over... the equator down about as far west as Kansas, Nebraska is 99. We're shooting 121, which is about as far west as the west coast, and from here. So that satellite is always in the same place. It's geosynchronous orbit. Its rotation is one Earth day, so it's always in the same place in the sky, which is good because that tells you where to look for it. So there are a lot of different applications and web pages and so forth. You put in your latitude and longitude, and it says the satellite is in such and such a direction, your azimuth and your altitude and the skew, the amount of rotation you put on the dish. It'll spit out these three numbers, and you set those on your equipment, and there's the satellite, in theory.
In theory, and that takes some time and some practice to do. It took us quite a while, because as Gamskunk said, there was one tree happened to be right in the way, and we didn't think it was, actually. We thought we had a clear sight. But we moved it and did get a good signal. And
We moved the dish, not the tree.
Yeah, we did not move the tree, that's right. So the signal is on, the satellite is working. Then comes perhaps the most disappointing part of satellite internet, and that has to do with its speed. For those of you who are used to cable systems or even cellular MiFi, 4G, LTE speeds, you're not going to get that speed with a satellite.
No, it's about 1 meg per second, which is probably as fast as 2G MiFi cards were. Of course, everybody has faster stuff now. It's you can load most just about every web page. The problem is you know, streaming video is going to be a problem, and it's going to take a while. You can't sit there on YouTube all day like you can with your 7 to 12 megabits per second home connection. It's slower than that. It's fast enough to work with, but because it's sort of a niche to be able to move your system around. If you have a stationary satellite system, you can get fast stuff. But if you want to be able to go from coast to coast and the Canadian border down into Mexico, you have to get on one of these older, slower satellites. And it's about 1 meg per second when nobody else is online. When everybody is online, you know, Friday night, it slows down to half that or sometimes a little slower.
So you can pull up websites. You have no problem doing email. Actually, email works just great. It becomes you can upload photos to your friends, but that's about it. You can't do video. It just is much too intensive. So I won't be able to do any of the video reports through it, but we can update the website, we can send email, and certainly check our Facebook group. And you're on all the time, and I can't see any problems with it when you're on, right?
No, I'm on all the time. I sit around and play around online, and you have to realize that half the time my cell phone is turned off because it doesn't work. There's no way to get online except satellite internet. So half the time, that's my only link to the civilized world.
So that's the other thing. And the final aspect I think we need to talk about is the cost. The system I just got, which we got a really great price on it, and I think that they would probably do the same for most of our listeners. I got everything. I got the really nice tripod. I got the dish, the offset bracket, all of that, all those devices, and it ended up costing about $1,500. That's including a couple of fancy gizmos that will help you kind of point at the sky and get a good look. Campsite doesn't use all that stuff, but they're pretty nice.
No. I just sort of intuit where the satellite is. No, I have a bunch of free software that does the same as Mike's fancy gizmos here. Mine, when I set up, was a little over $1,000 5 years ago. So, you know, it takes a fair investment, and then there's a monthly fee you've got to pay for it. You can get more internet than you can use for $100 a month.
Yeah. I think I'm paying about $111 a month, and it works out pretty good. And they have a free period, and it's based, I think, from midnight to 6 a.m. or something like that, but it's on your time. So I'm in Michigan. That's where my home is, and that's where the account is registered to. But out here in the West where we are, for example, that means I can operate free from 9 p.m. until about 3 a.m., which is not, I'm not going to be up that late. But 9 p.m. is pretty good for free use. So you can get a lot, and you're not going to use up your bandwidth just doing email and looking at a few websites for about $100 a month or so. When you're not traveling, there's an option. I think it's $15 a month just to go inactive, but you keep your account.
I cheaped out. I got a $60 a month plan, and I regularly pay $100 because every time you go over the limit, they charge you more. So I probably should have gotten a better plan to start with.
Well, that, I hope, answers most of our questions about your questions about satellite internet. Again, we want to really recommend Barb and Joe down in Tucson.
Yeah, they're one of the very few people that will set up this system for RVers. And there are some other technologies with automatically pointing dishes, but they're not going to fit on a camper van. You know, that you need a Class A bus to put all that stuff on the roof. This is fairly easy to aim and work. The automatic people have just as many cabling problems as we do, so you don't avoid any of that stuff by getting a manually aimed tripod dish. And they really know this system cold, and they've been doing it forever, and they swap around from company to company to get you the best way to get online.
So we'll put a link up if you want to get a price for them. But again, it's not for everybody. But if you do a lot of boondocking, and more of us are doing that more and more, this is the way to always have at least the email and the ability to go and read roadtrekking.com in our Facebook group. That's what it's from. Campscon, thanks for all your help today and for even commiserating over my my blood.
All right. As long as you don't bleed on me, it's okay, Mike.
No more bleeding. And now I'm online. And we've got our stuff. Photos, questions, you whatever you want, send us a note in the comments with the show notes for this, and we'll do our best to answer them. Thanks very much, Campsong.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Well, so ends another episode of Road Trekking, the RV podcast. It's been great coming to you from Maine and Arizona as we continue our travels across North America this summer of 2015. I want to thank you so much for putting us in your ear this week. And remind you that this show is all about you as well. We'd love to hear where you are. Keep in touch. Use the leave a voicemail link for any of the tips, suggestions, comments, reactions, off the beaten path reports. We'd love to make you a part of the program as well. New episodes of the Road Trekking RV Podcast are released every Wednesday. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. That way, every time a new episode comes, it automatically gets into your queue, and all you have to do is hit play, and you can hear the next episode.
Or you can find us and listen, download, whatever, right from the roadtrekking.com blog. Please follow us on Facebook. Join our Facebook group. Search Road Trekking The Group and click join to be a part of that community. It's a great way if you ever have quick questions, comments, also to share. It's fun to see where everybody is at different times of the year. If you're traveling in a certain part of the country, you can post on the Facebook group, hey, I'm going in this part of the country. What's to see? And you'll get more recommendations from others who live in that area or have traveled it, places to eat, places to camp, places to boondock, all that, and our very interactive and active Facebook group. Don't forget the blog. I would love to get your comments. You can comment at the end of every post. And again, send us voicemail. Till next time, on behalf of my wife, Jennifer, I'm Mike Wendland, road trekking across North America. See you next week.